Welcome to our Transitions Multimedia Studios for the podcasting series titled Original Thinking, Remembering the Source of Our Consciousness. I'm Alan Huttner, your host, along with my guest, Glenn Aparicio Perry. Glenn is the author of the book Original Thinking, A Radical Revisioning of Time, Humanity, and Nature, upon which this series is based. Glenn is a writer, educator, speaker, visionary, and the founder, past president of Seed Institute, where he organized and participated in the groundbreaking Language of Spirit Dialogue Conferences, held annually from 1999 through 2011. These conferences, which inspired Glenn's latest book, Original Thinking, brought together Native and Western scientists in dialogue on a variety of deeper ways of knowing. Glenn is the founder and current president of the Circle for Original Thinking, based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we are together in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome, Glenn, for podcast one in our series.
Hi, Alan. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. So I've had the good fortune of coursing through Original Thinking, A Radical Revisioning of Time, Humanity, and Nature. And, of course, the book opens with a prayer. And I thought, well, it would be very appropriate to have some form of that prayer as a start to the series. So I would turn it over to you for that.
Sure. Well, okay. I'll launch into the opening prayer of the book, and we'll see what happens. I mean, I think it's a good thing to pray whenever you begin any important gathering, any important meeting.
This comes up in the book, too, which we'll probably talk more about a little later on.
Well, it comes from the idea that originally thinking was thanking. Because the origin of the word thinking is thanking, you know, in about seven languages. And so, originally, all our thoughts were prayers. So, beloved Creator, great mystery, great spirit that underlies all the things I see, touch, taste, hear, and smell. On this beautiful morning, to the east, I make an offering to the sun, place of origin, where my life and my thoughts come from, and I thank you. For the amazing gift of life for which I will be grateful for all my days to come. And I promise to live my life well and serve the people in all our relations. To the south, I thank the elements, the light, the air, the water, and the earth. You are what makes up creation, and I thank you because I too am made of you, and I pray that you be returned to your original state of purity and wholeness. I pray that all the people understand that we are made of the elements, that you not only make up life, but our life, our awareness, and that you be treated with the respect and reverence you deserve. To the west, I make an offering to the ancestors, to all the people of the spirit world that have been and still are teachers to me. Grandfather Topasanaquit Canoe, Grandfather Leon Secatero, Grandfather Dan Moonhawk Alford, Grandmother Paula Gunn Allen, Grandfather Bohm, Grandfather Krishnamurti, Grandmother Blavatsky, my own mother and father, Joan Perry and Juan Paricio Perry. To the north, I thank all the four-leggeds, the deer, the elk, the bobcat, the fox, and especially the bear for his introspective wisdom and medicine. I thank the flying ones, the songbirds, finches and jays who serenade me daily, the quail, the owl who visits in sight, or sound. And special thanks for the soaring birds of prey, the hawks and eagles, for their gift of vision and oversight. I thank the finned ones who swim in the rivers and oceans, and I pray for the finned ones that their waters be clean again. I pray for the crawling ones and the burrowing ones who make space in the earth for next year's plantings, the snakes who teach us to shed our tacit infrastructures and embrace change, and for the change in the seasons that teach us the timing of Mother Earth. I thank you, beloved Creator, for all the immense beauty that is everywhere, in the mountains, the valleys, the rivers, the oceans, the mesas, buttes, and caves, with special gratitude for the plants and trees who are the lungs of Mother Earth. I am grateful for every breath I take, and I consciously offer my breath back to the plants and the trees, thanking you for the beautiful partnership we share, breath for breath, for your special medicine, your nutrition, your companionship. I thank the clouds that form over the mountains, bringing rain and snow to the thirsty valley that sustains the fruits and vegetables that feed me in body and spirit, as well as all the other hungry mouths that need them. I thank my wife, my four-legged companions, and the plants who share my indoor space for their love and support. And also the spiders and the flies, whoever comes in. And I thank the unseen helpers, including the bacteria in my own body, and the living presence of wood from my old drafting table that serves as my writing desk, the bamboo floor it rests upon, the trees I am blessed to see from my window, the aspens, the pinyons, the ponderosa pines, as well as the cottonwoods down by the river. And I pray that the river be returned to her full health and that all rivers be undammed and allowed to flow free, as is their nature. Beloved Creator, I thank you for the blessing of being able to share what I have come to experience, and even though my knowledge will never be complete, I pray that I do not hold on to knowledge, but allow it to come forward as needed in service to whomever needs it. And I am grateful for you that feeds me from the original source, and I trust this wellspring to be always whole, complete, and timeless. I pray that the message I share benefits not just humankind, but the many relatives I share this beautiful planet with. I pray to and through the tobacco within my pipe and send the prayers to the heavens and to all the realms I cannot travel to so that my prayer is heard by all it needs to hear. Aho, Mitaku Yasen. May it be so. I say these things for all my relations.
Wow. Thank you, Glenn. Very beautiful. And, you know, whatever is out of balance, in conflict or disharmony in our lives, on our planet, may our words and our dialogue here in this sharing help to restore love and balance in the world as we move forward with this podcasting series.
Well, that's a beautiful prayer right there.
Well,
thank you.
A great pleasure to have you here once again. I thought we might do a little overview of the four core questions posed by you in the book, which are also the titles of the four parts of the book, the way it's divided up. And so if you would, I'm going to just read each question in each part and then have you give a little overview and anything else freeform that you want to speak to about how this was organized or how it came to you. So part one, and I'll read them all just to have a context first. Part one, which is titled Origin, is it possible to come up with an original thought? Part two, which is Departure, what does it mean to be human? Part three is Return, the question, how has our thinking created the world today and what is now emerging? And part four, titled Renewal, with the question, can education promote the renewal of original thinking? So let's begin with probably the first part, which we'll spend a lot of time in together in this first series. Is it possible to come up with an original thought?
Sure. That is the seed question for the entire book. And it emerged, the book is inspired from dialogues that I was blessed to participate in that began actually before I was involved. In 1992, David Bohm was approached by Leroy Littlebear and David Peet, who was a colleague of Bohm's, and asked to initiate a series of dialogues that was really a delving into the underlying fabric of the cosmos. And it had at the table, exactly 500 years after Columbus came to the continent, there was an equal exchange between indigenous elders and Western scientists. That was the origin of what Seed did later in 1999 when we initiated our dialogue series that went on for 13 years that you mentioned in your introduction.
Uh-huh.
And in that very first dialogue that Seed did, the question that Leroy Littlebear threw out first was, is it possible to come up with an original thought? And I've been thinking about that question ever since, and that's what inspired the book, because an amazing thing happened when he asked that question, which was that all the Western people in the room tried to think of something brand new that had never been done before, ever been said before, and the indigenous people in the room took the question completely differently as an invitation to connect with origin as a place or a place of ever-present regeneration. And that's when the seeds of the book began to form. Because, so the question is it possible to come up with an original thought? Really, what it brings up is a multitude of things. So going back to that initial dialogue, when the Western people tried to think of something brand new that had never been done before or said before, why? Why did they do that? Because the very word original has completely flipped its meaning. It used to come from place. It used to refer to origin as a place. But somehow, time has replaced place in Western way of thinking. And it really doesn't matter whether it's Western science or Western religion. Both, you know, whether it's 6,000 years or 14 billion years, it doesn't really matter. They both are married to the idea of there being a beginning. And it's built into our syntax, as Carlos Castaneda does these beautiful poems in the beginning of one of his books, and as Dan Moonhook Alford used to refer to. We're addicted in English to beginnings, middles, and ends. So once we part ways with place, we forget about our true origins. And we go on a little journey. Sometimes it's referred to as the hero's journey, and it's put in a way that it's a good thing. And perhaps it is. I don't want to make a judgment about it. But there is a shadow side of going on a journey away from your origins. Mm-hmm. It marginalizes local knowledge. And what it does instead is it now says that knowledge can be transported to any place, which, of course, is the seed of imperialism.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's part one, is the beginning of that journey.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about this. I like what you said about original having its roots in origin as opposed to something new or something that's starting fresh from the moment. Which one wonders it ties back to the question of, you know, can you have an original thought? Things are being co-created that are seemingly new. Maybe you want to address that, like writing or assembling words into new thought forms. But in our case, we're still using the language we're either saddled with or create within. You know what I'm saying? So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any thoughts about new versus origin, that we can co-create some new things, but they're based on no beginning and end of our inventory to draw from?
Well, I don't believe there is anything new under the sun.
All right.
At the same time, there are all the time, there's new configurations of the elements. I tend to think of the elements as the creators. This is something that was taught to me by grandfather Leon Secatero. And if you think about the elements, light, air, water, earth, they're always interacting in this beautiful way. You know, when a child is in school and they are asked to grow a plant in a seedling pot, they have a living example of how light, air, water, and earth are all necessary in combination to create life. And that's kind of the way I think about it. So there's always new combinations, yes, and there's new cycles. Later on in the book, when I'm in the part three area where we're talking about how has our thinking created our world and what is now emerging, I look at thought very similarly to the hydrological cycle of water. I actually think that's how paradigms come about. They come about in cycles. We tend to think of a new paradigm as opposed to an old paradigm, and we tend to think of that as a progressive thing. But really, it's coming back to something that's been ignored. And so that's it. I mean, and if you think about it, I mean, that's – why would it be so weird for us to think like water thinks? Because we're 70% water.
Yeah, and 99% space. around which the molecules and these uh-huh. particles are. So very important setting this context. We're going to take our first break here. Alan Huttner hosting Glenn Perry. And this is a podcasting series that we have titled Original Thinking, Remembering the Source of Our Consciousness, and we shall come back. Alan Huttner here hosting, along with my guest Glenn Perry in the studio for this podcasting series. It's titled Original Thinking, Remembering the Source of Our Consciousness, and we're in podcast one of the series. Glenn, let's go back to the organization of the book, the four parts of the book. If you just missed that, go back to the first segment that we had here. And we went over the four parts and the four questions, and you were in the kind of finishing up with the first part. And the first question, is it possible to come up with an original thought? But you thought this would be a good time to also do an overview and connect, mm-hmm. kind of connect the dots of the four parts. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just kind of turn it over to you, and you continue with the conversation.
Sure. Yeah. And I can do that overview now, but I just for the benefit of those people who are writers out there, when I actually wrote the book, I didn't know what the overview was. I didn't do an outline. I didn't do a plan, and it wasn't organized in the way that, you know, you organize a rational argument. And part of the reason for that is that I wanted to embody what I was speaking about in the book itself, so it is an unfolding. So when I'm talking about time not being a line, I really mean it. So in doing that, the first question, is it possible to come up with an original thought, opens up the idea of time. And time in the West has become an abstraction, something that's outside of us. Something that, you know, previously used to be within us. So we used to think of time in such an interconnected way with the stars, with the seasons, with the, you know, the planting seasons were based on the stars, with the return of the berries, fruits, and nuts, with migration patterns of animals and whatnot. Time was a part of us. It was within our belly button. We didn't have to think about it. But when time becomes an abstraction, and particularly only really, you know, 500 years ago, when Newton is dealing with time, and time becomes a mathematical abstraction, something that we believed to exist separate from us, what does that bring up? That's how we get to the question of what does it mean to be human? Because the same thing has happened to us there. As human beings, we used to define ourselves in relation to the rest of creation. But now we start to define ourselves in separation from the rest of creation, not just as unique, because all creatures are unique, but as Dave Abram would say, uniquely unique. And so we look at ourselves in that kind of way. And when we look for other signs of consciousness, we look in this very false way, quite frankly, because one of the questions we pose, we assume that humans are the pinnacle of creation, and then we look down upon the rest of creation and try to make judgments about creation. So of course we're not going to see it that way, but the very word consciousness used to mean with knowing. I mean, if that's how you break the word down, con, or, you know, and science. And science just means knowing. So con means with. So with knowing, we used to understand that our consciousness was dependent upon the rest of nature. But we've just gone away from that. And that's really sad. So we've gone away from it so far that we think that humans are the only conscious beings. Then we try to locate consciousness within one person's head. Then we try to locate it in the brain. We're never going to do that. We're never going to be able to do it because it doesn't work that way. That's why we can never find memory traces within the brain itself. So that's part two. And then part three of the book, we actually delve into the full continuum of thought. So how is our thinking creating the world, created the world, and what is now emerging? So in that part, we try to reclaim the aspects of thought that have been rejected. And what have we rejected? We've rejected everything that isn't mental, rational thought. And we no longer call it thought at all. So gut instinct is completely separate. That's actually what we attribute to all the intelligence in the animal kingdom. So if a bee can tell where the rest of the colony, where the pollen is, or where the water sources are, we call that instinct. If we were doing it, we would call it intelligence. But because a bee is doing it, it can't be smart, so it must be instinct. So we've rejected that part of our knowing. We've also rejected our emotional connection to the world. And we've rejected our intuitive connection to the world in ways that we never used to do. So the word intuition comes from the word intuito. It used to mean a sacred contemplation. So, and our gut instincts, we used to understand that that was part of a process. So Emerson, you know, understood this and spoke about all our progress being an unfolding, first having an instinct, then an intuition, then a knowing as the plant, as root, bud, and fruit. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the full continuum process of coming to know. And some, you know, Descartes is wrongly attacked sometimes both by spiritual, people who consider themselves spiritual, and by Western science. But Descartes, I'll give him some credit because he was trying to look at how it is that we come to know something. That's what his process was about. And he was a spiritual person. He was trying to prove the existence of God. Hmm. You know, but that's a big subject, but go ahead.
I want to just step in here. I'm standing and somebody asking a question about thought and something that's been more kind of new paradigm, just to, you know, thought is creative. There's a lot been written about thought as creative. And I think it's an important principle that maybe you would speak to, because that has resulted in the world we've created collectively, 8 billion human beings, as well as you point out, you know, consciousness is not just privy to human beings. Everything is interacting in this field. But that we have some ability to move molecules with thought and rearrange things with thought. And, you know, maybe it gets back to this first question even, is it possible to come up with an original thought? But thought is creative. We are all thinking, creating. And if we are in the soup, so to say, right now, for perceiving we're separate and we're thinking separate and we're not connected to the whole, the good news is we might be able to correct it. But I'd like you to speak to a thought as creative as a principle.
I agree that thought is creative. I mean, I tend to think of thought not too differently than what most people would use the word spirit. So thought is tantamount to spirit. Thought is an emergent property from the world, or from the cosmos, if you want to think on that level, that moves through us, and it is a force that is always moving. Thought has a life of its own. So my quibble, I would say, with some of the thinking that talks about how we create our own thoughts is that tends to be more más o menos from the paradigm of an individual holding thoughts, and doesn't really usually go to the field of thought that's moving through us.
This is very important. So you need to amplify what you're talking about. I think I know, but for our listeners out there, you're basically questioning whether there is a such thing as an original thought.
That's part of the book, and it's one of the questions that often comes up when you're talking about, is it possible to have an original thought? Is, are we the originator? Are we the originator of our thoughts, or are we a receiver of our thoughts?
And, or both.
Well, I think we are both. Yeah. I tend to relate a little bit more with the receiving aspect, because we're a receiving aspect, and almost like a transformer, we have an opportunity to what to do with that thought. So we're like us as human beings. We are connected to a vast power grid, you might say, as I've heard Octa say. You know, so we're like a light bulb, perhaps, you know, in this gigantic power grid that's flowing through us. And when it does flow through us, we have an opportunity to do with that thought and then to send it on. And if we send it on with good intention, that's a prayer. Mm-hmm. And if we send it on with ill intention, that's basically a curse. We do have an important role to play, but we shouldn't confuse ourselves with the entire power station. We're not God. We're an aspect of God, if you want to call it God or creator.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn, if you go back, I don't know the timelines on this, thinking of linear time, and I know we're trying to break out of linear time too, but if you go back pretty far, what was the language? You know, what was the spoken word in days when cavemen and women roamed the earth with the dinosaurs, and there wasn't that well-developed intellect that might have been a lot simpler then. We've built something up that exists in the whole field, the quantum field of thought, where we receive information from. So it's been built up. There's a lot more out there that's been created or co-created since the early days of somebody having a hammer and a chisel and a rock and putting a picture on the wall as a representation of something in the field of consciousness or in the material world, to the extent where, you know, maybe we're way over intellectualized and way too much caught up in words, although you are a wordsmith too. So run with that idea.
Mm. Well, words are important because they reveal the archaeology of the mind. And I'm particularly fascinated with the way words shift in meaning over time, like the word original, you know, like the word consciousness, you know, like the word period.
Are we evolving in consciousness and thought?
Yes and no. We're evolving, but we're, you know, at least the way I see it is we're evolving in more of a circle than a line. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we're talking about, you know, if you're talking about cavemen, I hesitate to go into this, Alan, because this is a huge subject, but I'm fascinated with the idea of lost civilizations. My personal belief is that we were far more advanced a very long time ago than is imagined. So what is being created, and it's just a creation, a story of modern life, is that we are at the pinnacle of human beings' progress. And it's inconvenient truth to look at the incredible monuments that existed very long time ago.
Before cavemen.
At the time when archaeologists are saying that we were just chiseling with stone, as you just mentioned before, we were actually creating monuments that we have no idea how to build today.
Yeah.
We don't know how to build the Great Pyramid. We don't know how to build any of these pyramids in Mexico or all across the world, things that have been discovered underneath sand that are just thousands and thousands of years old. We don't know how to carve those granite rocks and fit them together like they did then.
Yeah. And we're going to take a break here, but it gets back to this idea of cycles, circles, and spirals that you do write about, and maybe that's a good point to take a pause here and then come back and pick up on that, because I had asked about evolution, are we evolving? And I think it's really important that you brought up that, wait a minute, things before that particular era that archaeology tracks, there might have been very intelligent civilizations on the planet or off the planet that preceded that.
Mm-hmm.
So Glenn Perry is our in studio guest here, and this book that we're engaging in is, you know, a seminal work, Original Thinking, A Radical Revisioning of Time, Humanity, and Nature. And our podcasting series is titled Original Thinking, Remembering the Source of Our Consciousness. And we'll come back. Glenn Aparicio Perry is our guest in studio here along with me, Alan Huttner, your host for this podcasting series, Original Thinking, Remembering the Source of Our Consciousness. It's based on Glenn's book, Original Thinking, A Radical Revisioning of Time, Humanity, and Nature. And in this segment here, we kind of left off with this idea of evolution and are we evolving? And, you know, we came into this discussion about linear time and the illusion and abstractions around that and circles and spirals, and keep getting back to a lot of people in modern Western civilization think, well, we're very evolved. I mean, look at the technologies we have. Look at how we've advanced. And, you know, on the other hand, I mean, one could bring in genetically modified organisms, you know, digital equipment. And the question is, what's the quality of life? Is that, what's a measure of evolution? And I'll let you run with that.
Well, I don't want or your listeners to think I don't believe in evolution, but I believe that evolution, as taught by Darwin, is actually a small and misplaced piece of the puzzle.
Very important.
because in the ancient Vedic cosmologies, what they talk about is preceding evolution is an involution. And so an involution is a descent of spirit into matter. And then it reemerges in the inverse order in which it descended. So if you want to like picture what Adam and Eve is, more or less Adam and Eve is at the bottom of that descent, where spirit has encased itself completely in matter and just starts to reemerge, and that's when we become aware of our physicality. That's when we become aware that we're naked. That's when we have this emergent consciousness. And so that's where evolution kicks in. But of course, we're always moving back toward home because we have a memory of where our spirit was that we're returning to. And that's why we have a spiritual yearning. And that is at the, you know, that's what's feeding the physical evolution, you know. So it's always a circle or a spiral, if you will, circles within circles being connected that is moving us. So I'm really more interested in what is unfolding, not where we're progressing in a linear sense, but what is unfolding, what is necessary to unfold at this and these times. Yeah. That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah. And speaking of cycles, again, you pointed out in our last conversation that there may have been very evolved or awake, intelligent societies before that have collapsed back in, have evolved or returned to matter in some way.
Well, I think they were probably evolved in a different way that we're evolved now.
Yeah.
So consider this for a second. Now, we evolved rational thinking to a high level, and now I would say actually it's degrading, because we're, you know, it's been degrading for quite some time, but we did evolve it to a high level, and that's what we're good at now. But a long, long time ago, we were probably good at, and this is not something I'm inventing here, you know, this is something Rudolf Steiner would say, or theosophists would say. We were different. We were evolved in a different way. Our will imagination was connected with the world in a very direct way. So we were able to do what we call today some paranormal ability, like telekinesis. It may be that that's how we move those gigantic monumental stones. Maybe we move them with our minds. I can't prove that. That's my intuition around that kind of thing. And we moved away from that for whatever reason, because that cycle was over and we began to develop a different way of being in the world. And both are good. My belief about original thinking is I want to reclaim some of the cast out aspects of thought. And just claim them back. So will, imagination, intuition, gut instinct, emotional being, heart-to-heart connection with nature, with people, that's what I'd like to see come back into the picture and be honored equally with rational thought.
Yeah, you know, something came up as you were speaking to that, too. Matter cannot be created or destroyed, you know, a principle of physics. That it's just rearranging all the time, and we have some participation in the rearranging. But I know somebody out there is asking this question, so why am I here, you know, or who am I and why am I here? And I don't know whether you want to address that as part of having a consciousness or awareness of this cycle spiral that we're in right now, which hopefully is going to be reversed out of this deep separation and lack of connectivity with nature, a lack of connectivity with each other, and quite frankly, not enough love and a lot of separation, fear, and hate.
That's a lot you just put on the table.
Well, I don't want to. We have 10 minutes.
Okay, that's all right. I don't want to answer for others about why they're here, you know, because I think that answer is different for each person. Your first, what was the first part of your question?
It was about a physics principle or an Einsteinian principle.
Yes, that's a great, one.
Matter cannot be created or destroyed.
Well, that's a good one because that can bring us back something to where we started about when we were talking about time not being linear.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's really true. I mean, you know, one of the ways I'd like to suggest to listeners to demonstrate that the past never dies and is still with us is everybody's had the experience of skipping a stone out on the water, perhaps, and you see how the ripples get larger and larger, and then they become more faint and faint, and then eventually you can't see them, but they're still there. Because, and that's really the best way I know of explaining vibration. You know, the cosmos is vibration. And everything that has occurred is still occurring. So there is no such thing as past. As William Faulkner said, the past is not dead. It's not even past. You know, it's still here, and so it's still feeding us. And, you know, there have been a lot of great writers like Rupert Sheldrake who are talking about that memory that's still here, you know, and it's a very important thing to realize. And when you do realize that, you have an opportunity to actually make a direct connection with spirit and not give over your power really to just learning what's in a textbook or something that somebody said before, because that's all inert knowledge. That's something somebody learned, they put in a book, you study it in school. And that's not living, but the living knowledge, the living, breathing presence of the land, creator, spirit, whatever you want to call it, or thought, original thought, that's moving through you, that's alive. That is always alive. And in that sense, the ancestors have never passed. They're just in a different plane. They're in a more subtle vibration, but they can still inform us. And that's why I personally pray to my ancestors every day.
Yeah. All the ancestors, all of our ancestors, all of the past lineages, you're saying, and I think there's a lot of support to this, exist in a field of vibration, frequency. Maybe they're not physically in a body anymore, but there are many beings and awake conscious forces that are not on a 3D reality level, that you can see them, but we know connections are made with these people.
Yes,
or
whatever
beings,
you want to call them.
Beings, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's dive into the book a little more. I mean, this is the inspiration for this, although I've enjoyed probably some digressions here. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to that very last, the last important point, that it's all there. Nothing goes away. It exists in some form. There's pictures in the book about fractal theory. I think that's another word for that says, you know.
You mean fractal theory?
Theory?
There's pictures of fractals. Okay.
Well, so somewhere I remember somebody talking about a fractal theory, saying that the butterfly flying past you in this realm, not unlike the pebble and the ripple or the skipping stones in the water, that's still, that subtle current, the air is still moving somewhere in the field. And that's important. That's a different perspective. It's not over.
It's not over.
It's not over.
But we've been programmed to think differently. So we're told that the old ones, the ancient ones who believed in mythical time, or the idea that time came around again in a circle, and that's why they did ceremonies to honor that coming around again, we're told that they're behind us. That those that believe in a linear view are more advanced. And actually, you know, look, I have a lot of compassion for the Western worldview, because if you think about it, once we embrace the idea of time as being irreversible, as events being irreversible, what's called historical time or historical consciousness, once we embrace that idea, then of course those that think differently are going to be seen as behind us. But it's subtly arrogant. It's not intentionally arrogant, but it is arrogant to think that those that are still connected with the rhythms of nature, that there's something yet not quite evolved about them. They're developing. That's what we call those developing countries. And the implication, very clear implication, is that we're more developed. They're behind us. But actually, it's their wisdom we're going to need to save us from ourselves.
Thanks for saying that, Glenn, because, you know, over the years, in doing interviews in conjunction with, you know, Transitions Radio Magazine, the show, 30-plus years, I've gotten to talk to a lot of people. And again, I want to really give accolades to this book, Original Thinking. Mm-hmm. Original Thinking, very important. But most recently, within the last year, there was a woman who wrote a book called Why Wait? And she had the capacity to have communication with these people in this field. They were the ancestors, some that she knew. And then she realized that she could talk with other people, other, you know, clients that would come to her. Could you talk to my deceased father, mother, brother? And this book said, these people are over there and they're encouraging us to evolve into a more loving, unified field, because if we do that, it helps them as they do that from the other side to help us. You know, it's a collaborative effort. That's why it's not in the past necessarily. And those people, you know, maybe not every ordinary human being has contact with their deceased relatives or friends or whatever, but some people do. They have that ability. And I think that's an important part of we are. What we do here affects them. What they're doing in their realm of consciousness affects us.
And oh, that's beautiful, Alan. I think that's... that's true. We need to pray for the ancestors. You know, sometimes people think about, you know, again, they think about they may pray for the ancestors, but they think the ancestors are dead. And therefore, and there's nothing, I'm not trying to belittle it. I'm just saying that there is a living relationship, actually, between us and the ancestors. But I don't want to overstate this, that we shouldn't assume that the ancestors are always right. You know, one thing, just because somebody has passed to the spirit world and is disembodied from the physical, that probably opens up some kind of ways of knowing that are harder for us to access. But let's not necessarily assume that everything they say is perfectly true. Mm-hmm. My own personal experience with ancestors when I'm communicating with them is I notice a lot of impatience. They probably notice all the ways that I waste time, you know, in the linear sense, you know, and they can probably see more clearly what my real mission is in life, and they're impatient. They want me to get on with it, you know, and I might want to, you know, watch the World Series game or something like that, which probably doesn't have much effect on things, but, you know, I mean, it's an enjoyable pastime.
Yeah, and it appears we do come back. Reincarnation, I'm talking about, because there's things that we're working out, cause and effect relationships. And that, I don't know if you get into that in the book or not, but for now, I think we need to take a break here with Glenn Perry, because we are in a series here, a podcasting series, titled Original Thinking, Remembering the Source of Our Consciousness, again, based on Glenn's wonderful book, Original Thinking, A Radical Revisioning of Time, Humanity, and Nature. And we have just concluded with, you know, podcast one in our series. So we invite you to stay tuned for podcast number two in our series coming up soon.